Recordings have started.
Thanks, Christine. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms and All GTLDs PDP Working Group call on the 28th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you happen to be only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? All right, thank you. Hearing no names, I would also like to remind all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will hand the meeting back over to Kathy Kleiman.
Thanks so much, Michelle. This is Kathy Kleiman, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the RPM Working Group, as you know so well. Phil Corwin has joined us, another of the co-chairs, and J. Scott Evans is at a meeting and sends his regrets for not being able to join us this evening. It is evening for the East Coast and Central and Pacific in the United States and North America, but it is morning for Australia and Asia. This is our Asia-friendly call, and so thank you to everyone for joining us tonight, and hopefully we have people joining us who don't normally have the opportunity to join us, so we appreciate the opportunity to have the call at this time. So the first item on our agenda, we have a lot to cover tonight, and traditionally we make this a short call, and I'm going to still try to do that, not our full 90 minutes, but we do have a lot of material to cover tonight. So first things first, are there any updates to statements of interest? Okay. Then moving right along, it is our pleasure as co-chairs to update you on the GNSO Council discussion and the decision granting our data gathering request on the Sunrise period and trademark claims. This is attributed largely to the excellent leadership, I think, of our co-chair, Phil Corwin, also a GNSO counselor who presented so well, and the tremendous preparation that Mary Wong and Amr did of a lot of material for the GNSO Council to answer a broad range of questions that they expected to be asked and that it were, in fact, asked. But, Phil, if I might, I'd like to turn it over to you for discussing some of the council questions that arose and the council requirement that was put on as part of the grant of our request. Over to you. Yeah.
Thanks, Kathy. I'll be brief. Yeah, the council was, they had to refamiliarize themselves with the DMPM, even though that came out of council almost 2 years ago. This was the first time that a working group has put in a formal data metrics request. So they had questions about how this would affect our timeline, whether ICANN had the financial resources, all of that, but apparently the questions were satisfactorily answered. After the motion was approved on a voice vote, and they did add the new clause. Just let me review this here. Yeah, the which I believe was number two, that the council instructs the leadership of the RPM PDP, which is myself, Kathy, and Jay Scott, to work with staff and outside experts to structure the data request in such a way that the value and relevance of the data is maximized. That was always our intent anyway, so there was absolutely no real impact on what we intended to do anyway. So that just happened last week. We haven't followed up with staff yet on the next step, but we'll be doing that later this week and speak with ICANN staff about the financial requests and assistance in identifying the relevant experts as soon as possible and get this thing going. And we did discuss with them how we can be rearranging our work within our time track to minimize the additional months that this creation of the surveys, dissemination, and then collection of the data and analysis will add to the overall work on phase one. So I think that pretty much covers it. I don't know if Kathy had anything to add or if anyone has any questions.
Yeah, this is Kathy. Phil, I have a question for you, and you commented on it, but let me go back to it. The Council's additional direction to us to maximize the value of the data gathered, are there any additional steps you think we should be taking before we send the current questions for the Sunrise period and trademark claims out for review? Do you think it's incumbent on us to do anything further? And I pose the question to the working group as well. But to you first, Phil, it sounds like the answer is no, but I just wanted to double check.
No, I think, our sub-teams have substantially reworked and consolidated the questions. We've always known that the way they're now stated, they may have to be restated somewhat when put in the form of a survey to third parties. For a response, and that's why we're bringing professionals in, for the very point to maximize the value, to maximize the odds that we'll get answers and responsive answers that inform us to the maximum extent possible. So I think we're really at the step of the questions are fine until we meet with the survey designers and may have to rework them some at that point. And I would think we'd bring those rework questions back to the working group for review and approval before we send them out more broadly.
That's a really good point, review and approval. And of course, that's why we're going to the experts on what we're calling the anecdotal or the anecdotal evidence or the qualitative data, is so that they can help us phrase the questions in a neutral and unbiased way, being professional survey designers. That's great. Okay, so that sounds like we get to go forward now, and I pose it as a question, Phil, because I was on the call, but you are the GNSO Council expert. Finally, the path is open for the data gathering. We get to move forward.
Yes, it is. Yes,
this is exciting.
At least the data gathering that was listed in that submission to Council.
Terrific. But, thank you.
We should be okay, at least for the time being.
Excellent. Let me ask if staff, Amr, do you want to make any comment about the GNSO Council meeting or anyone else that was on it, participated in it, or wants to discuss it? Okay, terrific. With a big sigh of relief, we move forward from a data gathering exercise, which took a lot of time of your co-chairs and especially of our wonderful staff. Okay, but we're not done with data gathering. The data gathering that we're discussing that was funded, the data collection proposal that was funded by the Council, had to do with our first two recent sub-teams. As you know, the sub-team on Sunrise period and the sub-team on trademark claims. The third sub-team on additional marketplace RPMs has finished their questions, and in our last working group meeting, we went through the final questions for the additional marketplace RPMs and adopted them kind of in record time, and that was phenomenal. That's what we did last week. And staff has very, very helpfully come up with a document that they've titled and that Amr has now posted, Categorization of Additional Marketplace RPM Questions by Target Stakeholder / Respondent. And this was prepared and circulated by ICANN staff late last week. And what this is doing is taking the questions, and you'll see that there's a little bit of rearranging of the questions. Question two is below now. Rearranging the questions and suggesting who might be a great place to the appropriate place to ask the question. And as a working group, normally we've asked the sub-teams to look at the data gathering and then we've reviewed it. In this case, the sub-team actually had its work cut out for it writing the questions. So we're part of the data gathering exercise. And that's largely what tonight is devoted to, is are these questions directed to the right groups? Probably. Are there other groups that the questions should be directed to? Possibly. It's now time for us to put our imprint on this as we have put it on others. Michael Fleming, you have your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kathy. I had a question in regards to the timeline for the entire PDP as this new data gathering project will no doubt take some time. And I think Phil covered this a little bit. But I just wanted to ask if we have at least a lead time, or if not, how soon will we know or be what the lead time is and when we can expect to move to basically have that timeline ready.
Michael, let me stay on the phone for a second. Are you asking if we've revised the timeline in keeping with how long we think it'll take to gather the data and get it back?
Well, no doubt we will have to do that. So I guess the question is, what is the new timeline? And if it's difficult to assign a figure to that at the current time, when can we expect to have a revised one?
I think that's a good question, and I'm glad Amar has his hand up. Amar, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kathy, and thanks for the question, Michael. The same question did actually come up during the council meeting, and I think that the careful response would be that the working group needs to, as well as the co-chairs, need to be aware of, need to understand how much time it is first going to take to contract with professional assistance, as well as draft the questions in a way that maximizes their value in terms of data gathering and being neutral and unbiased, as Kathy mentioned earlier. So once these steps have taken place, I think it may be easier to predict a more realistic timeline moving forward. We hope that this will take place within the next month or so, but until then, I think it would be difficult to accurately predict how much time will be required to complete or what sort of adjustments will need to be made to the current timeline. Thank you.
Amar, before I consult, I'm going to agree that we'll know a lot more when we sit down with the professional survey drafters and get a sense from them. Phil, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just want to add one of the things I shared with council last week is that to the extent possible, we don't want to have any gaps where we're just not doing any work for weeks at a time while we're waiting for these surveys to be developed and come back. So what we'll probably do is double track, and by what I mean by that is that while the surveys are out, rather than completing Sunrise and trademark claims and then moving on to URS, we will, during that time, as soon as the survey goes out and we're through with other work, get into the URS, address the questions. I don't think we're going to have any kind of data needs that require third-party assistance like this in terms of the surveys. And so work on URS while we're waiting for those surveys to come back and get as much done on that as possible. And then when we put out an initial report, say middle of next year, that goes out for 40 days, and we can start going through the UDRP questions and data needs while the initial report on phase one is out for public comment. So we will keep kind of jumping ahead, starting to work on the next item, and then coming back when the information we're waiting on comes in. But we don't have a brand new timeline yet. Once we talk with the professionals about the survey process, we'll be able to provide that, I think.
Exactly. And the timeline and the process Phil talked about it is one that's been discussed by the co-chairs. So we will get back to you on that, Michael, as soon as we can. Okay. And any other hands? Any other points? Okay. Then back to this categorization of the additional marketplace RPM questions, which could also be labeled, data gathering, if we wanted to use our traditional title, data gathering. Lori Shulman, go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me, Kathy?
Yes, I can.
Great. I just wanted to know, I missed the first 4 minutes of the call. Was there a budget figure attached to the survey development at the end of the day, or just a general agreement that there'd be a survey done? I'm just curious if there's a dollar figure put to it at the end of the day.
I had to leave that call early because of the Jewish holiday, so let me ask Phil. Phil, did they limit it? Did they cap it?
Well, okay. With those of you, Phil here, with those of you familiar with the legislative process, the motion was the authorization. The actual appropriation is up to ICANN. The request was for a minimum of $50,000, and that was a staff, an estimate that came from staff that the co-chairs relied upon. And what ICANN will actually make available, I couldn't say yet. We're not at that stage yet, but the authorization is for a minimum of 50. At least that's the permission from council.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Kathy. I
didn't mean
to talk over you.
Oh, sure. Lori, and we shared with the GNSO Council that a number of the data items, I think about half, are actually things that ICANN staff can do and is already doing. So there's only, you know, approximately half of the questions that we're seeking outside input on and assistance with.
Okay, because I had some private, I don't know if I remember posting to the list or not, because, I was in the middle of calling you too, unfortunately. But I was concerned that when we talked about possibly, you know, doing multiple surveys or adapting the surveys for different audiences, that 50 as the minimum was exactly that, an absolute minimum, and that this could cost up to $250 if you were to do a lot of customization. And I just wanted to make sure that we're all kind of, you know, on a reality place, a realistic place when we plan this out, so that we get what we absolutely need and that we prioritize what we need as well. I think it's good to put that into the record, because actually the 50 is low, too low.
Interesting. That makes sense. Some people were speculating it was actually fairly high, given that we're actually looking for assistance with the survey questions and the phrasing, but not necessarily assistance with the surveys, since we can probably reach a number of these audiences via traditional channels like the registries and registrars. So I guess we'll have, you know, input again when we sit down with the professional survey designers, and as we work more closely, as your leadership team, the co-chairs and staff work more closely with ICANN on bringing in the professionals on this.
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Lori. Okay, anything further on the GNSO Council and the first data gathering request? Okay. So moving back to the document that we're looking at on the screen, the second data gathering request on additional marketplace RPM questions. And so this is a quick review by Amr, do you want to give us a quick overview of the document? You don't have to go through all of it, because we're going to go question by question, but just kind of go through what you and Mary were thinking as you prepared it, and what kind of input you were thinking it might still need.
Sure, Kathy. Thanks. This is Amr. As Kathy mentioned, this document is a draft document prepared by staff to review by the working group. And what it basically does is break down the different questions that the additional marketplace RPM sub-team has refined and was subsequently reviewed by the broader working group based on the target for that the questions should be sent to. So you have questions that are that need to be answered by working group members. For example, you have other ones that should be directed towards registry operators. There are questions that need to be sent to registrars and some to the TMCH providers themselves. So this document basically just breaks those questions down according to who needs to be asked which questions, and of course is subject to the working group review and approval. Kathy, was there anything else you would like me to add at this point?
No, just to thank you and Mary for getting us the first long leg of the way on this evaluation process, you know, taking the questions and, you know, trying to deem what data needs to be gathered and from whom. So that should make our lives much easier in the working group, and hopefully we can go through this document today and finalize it. So my thought is to go question by question, in some cases reading all of it, in some cases not reading all of the staff notes, because in some cases they're extensive, but seeing whether we agree with who the question is being directed to and whether we recommend any changes. Exactly the same thing we've done every time we've reviewed a proposed data gathering document from a subteam. Okay, any questions, issues, additions? Okay. Question one is a question for the whole working group. This is an umbrella question. How and to what extent does use of protected marks lists, e.g. blocking services, affect the utilization of other RPMs, especially Sunrise registrations? And this, and under the staff note, the subteam identified this question as the overarching issue on the topic of additional marketplace RPMs. It's anticipated that the working group will deliberate on this question following receipt and review of input on the other questions. So even though it's number one, it's really kind of the last question. It's kind of the policy question, whereas the other questions in most cases are data gathering questions. Does anyone think that anything should be added, not to the question, but to the data gathering element of it? The proposed data gathering element of it. Okay.
Kathy, this is Claudia.
Claudio, go ahead, please. You're on audio only. Okay.
Yes, I'm on audio only. Thank you. I don't have the document in front of me. Can you just read off what the proposed data sources are for this one?
This is proposed as an umbrella question, not for data, to be reviewed following receipt and input of all the other questions below. This is really an umbrella question to be addressed at the end. I'm not quite sure why it was put at the beginning, but it's an umbrella question. It's where we want to get to at the end as a policy, as a policy issue, as an overarching question.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Thanks.
Okay. Martin, Amr, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Amr again. I just wanted to add to your response and that Mary did circulate these questions to the mailing list on the 21st, I believe, of September. So, Claudio, you may be able to find the document being shared in your inbox if you want to take a look at it. And also wanted to remind you that this was this question was formerly question five, and during the review, Claudio, you had recommended that this be moved up as an overarching question and be moved to question one. So that's the question we're referring to right now, if that's helpful. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Claudio. I'm not going to be able to read everything in the chat room. I'm not going to be able to see all of it, but I see that there's something from Martin Silva that says, I think we should include this question as part of the survey and outreach we're already doing to the stakeholders. And I said, Martin, do you want to come online, on the call to speak to this? So this is something you'd like to see as outreach. Go ahead, please.
Hello, this is Martin for the record. I have a few remarks. I know you want to take time. I know every time someone takes a mic, it's taking someone else's time. So this is a very small remark in the sense of it's very straightforward. I think we should include this very broad question in all the other outreach and places where we are trying to gather data. I don't know exactly which one of them, but I'm pretty sure that this could be something we don't have to specifically use the like and stuff only, but surveys and other outreach things.
So, Martin, stay on the call for a second, if you would. This is Kathy, of course. Are you saying that as part of the working group's analysis and evaluation of this question, it might be good to tack it on? And that's one of the things we're thinking of trying to do is tack on certain questions, because we've already got a survey going out to registries, registrars, trademark owners, registrants, and others, that it might be good to put this question into that type of outreach and see what kind of input we get.
Yes, I think that the platform is already there, so that's a way we can gather data in a more efficient way as the council asked.
Okay. Terrific. That's a suggestion on the table, and it would be interesting to see what others have to say about this, since it is an overarching question that we're approaching. Looks like that suggestion has been captured by staff. Any other comments, objections? Okay, Martin, thank you. Thank you for the recommendation. Any other thoughts on question one? Okay, so it looks like, go ahead, George.
George Bricos for the transcript. As I noted in the chat room, I'm assuming that we actually have the data on the number of Sunrise registrations for each TLD, and then can match that up against the RPMs by TLD, the additional RPMs by TLD. Is that correct? And do we have that as a public data set, like in a spreadsheet format or something like that? Thank you.
Since that's part of the Sunrise data, does anybody remember, especially people that were on the Sunrise period team? I assume that's a key part of the data that we're gathering, and if I remember correctly, that's part of the data we're gathering under the Sunrise period. So, George, I think that's going to be there.
George Grigos again. I think the analysis group would have already had it, so I'm just questioning, wondering whether we have that as a public data set. Like, the analysis group report had summary data and analysis of that raw data, but I don't think they ever published the raw data that we could then use to match up with the additional RPMs. Because, for example, if we know that certain TLDs didn't have those RPMs and others, like the donuts ones, did have those additional RPMs, then we can compare the actual experiences. Like, we don't have to necessarily survey trademark holders to say what they would have done. We could actually see what they did do. And so that data should already exist. It's just a matter of, whether we, you know, have it from the analysis group. Like, just like we asked them for the top 500 terms, the raw data, it's unclear whether we actually have that raw data in terms of what their deliverables were. Thanks.
Okay. And, George, we may have it from the analysis group, but we might also have it from GDD. And so that should have been collected, I would think, as just part of the regular process of new GTLDs reporting to ICANN. Amar, if we could make a note about this, it seems a very reasonable request, and pulling information that we would have from the Sunrise period, whether it's the analysis group or ICANN itself, into additional marketplace RPMs to better analyze the Sunrise period and the overlap with private protected marks lists and other types of things. Okay. Terrific. George, thank you for the suggestion. Any other comments? Okay. Moving strangely from question one to question three, but as Amar pointed out, we were rearranging, and just for ease, we kept the original numbers. So this is a number of questions that staff has pointed out should be directed to registry operators. And so let me pose the question, are there, as I read through them, are there others? Are there other sources of this data as well? So question three, are registry operators relying on the results of the Trademark Clearinghouse validation services or accessing the Trademark Clearinghouse database to provide additional marketplace RPMs? And if so, in what ways? Is there language in the current adopted Trademark Clearinghouse policy or related documents that expressly permits, prohibits, or otherwise addresses such use by registry operators? Our registry operator is able to provide the same or similar additional marketplace RPMs without relying on the TMCH validation services or access to the TMCH database. Will there be an increase in cost? If so, what will this be to stakeholders along the value chain, i.e. brand owners, registries, registrars, and other registrants? A lot of questions, a lot of carefully thought about and worded questions by the sub-team now presented to the working group. Where do we go to get the data to gather this, to respond and to understand and to analyze these important questions? Martin, go ahead, please.
Yes, Martin Silva for the record. Here I have three remarks. I think I agree with Kathy. It's a very well-worded and thought question. So this is only, my remarks are only to maybe improve a light or a view, and it's already a very good question. First of all, is why only ask the registry operators? Why can't the providers also tell us how the registry operators are using the services? I think this second view can be useful to have a more full version of the reality, not only the registry operators' speech. Maybe providers can say something that registry operators don't really see or want to say. Second of all, and this one is really interesting for me, is I think we should also try to understand what is the consensus policy that ICANN has already implemented in terms of prohibiting or somewhere or some sort of addressing the trademark clearing house validation services and how they are used by the registries for additional marketplace RPMs. Basically, I'm asking how free are they to use these validation services and additional marketplace RPMs. This is a discussion I have in other chats in ICANN, which is how free are registries to actually create their own additional marketplace. Doesn't the policy that we are doing some sort of constraints the good faith of the terms and conditions of these additional marketplace RPMs? Maybe we have we're inside ICANN on the consensus policy, we're trying to have a balanced view, and maybe the validation services or the additional marketplace RPMs go outside or further from this scope that we have already balanced. So what my second remark would be that one. If maybe we should address if ICANN already doesn't have some sort of restraint on the validation services or the additional marketplace RPMs. And the third one on this question is what are the costs to various internet stakeholders for this additional marketplace? I'm thinking, of course, mainly on registrants. What are costs that they have to go through because of these extra RPMs out there? These are my three questions. It's really late here. It's midnight, so if my English is not exactly fluent, just ask me again and I can explain.
Great. Can you hold on a second? This is Kathy. It looks like Amr is capturing these, so let me just go through and make sure that for question three, that you're recommending, can the TMCH providers provide additional insight to this question, to question three and its subparts, I guess we'd say. And then the second question you're asking is, to what extent are registry operators allowed to provide additional marketplace RPMs? Do their contractual obligations with ICANN somehow create a restraint on registry operators providing these services? Is that a good summation, Martin, of the question that you're asking? Okay, I see. Clap,
yes,
clap, clap.
And I want to congratulate Amr because I'm really, really tired and my tongue is, you know, just all over.
Oh, I think you're very eloquent for closing in on midnight. So, and then the third question is, what is the cost on registrants due to the additional marketplace RPMs being provided? So, expanding this question to TMCH providers, to to, who would you ask the second question to? And that's not a, just a question to Martin, but to other, the question about contractual obligations. Is that a GDD question, or who might you ask that to?
Martin Silva here. I don't really know exactly who. Maybe I can legally have at least some sort of obligation to answer to us because of compliance issues with the registries and other contractual parties, but I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Okay. Well, glad to know that Amr has captured your thoughts accurately. Thank you so much for sharing them. It looks like John Nevitt has some concerns. John, do you want to come onto the phone? No, John says no. John says, again, we're not reviewing the additional marketplace RPMs. The second bullet was rejected by the subgroup, and bullet three, again, is beyond scope.
Kathy, this is Claudia. Can I take a comment?
Claudia, go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I was kind of going to – I had a thought similar to what John said, just in the sense that the last part sounded more of like a policy or sort of contractual interpretation question as opposed to a data source. As you know, the first part, the TMCH, would be another source that seemed correct to me, but I just – I think somehow in the phrasing of the second element, it sort of turned into a sort of a separate question. I'm not sure if that was the intent or not, but it was just an observation. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Claudio. To John, let me ask. There is, you know, towards the end of this question, there does appear to be a greater outreach. So will there be an increase in costs? It doesn't say costs to whom. And so one would think that's something we need to think about is costs. And then specifically in the very last piece, there's if so, which appears to be talking about costs, what will this be to stakeholders? I wish I'd been phrased it a little better, but if so, what will this be to stakeholders along the value chain, i.e. brand owners, registries, registrars, and other registrants? Does that imply some kind of outreach to brand owners, registries, registrars, and other registrants? Phil, I see you're in the queue. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And just I'm trying to, as we go through this exercise, I mean, at least my understanding is that the questions as they now stand are the questions that exist after a great deal of work in the sub-teams, and the sub-team questions were discussed and accepted last week. So I really think that the review of this document is probably, you know, we don't want to get into, again, rewriting these questions. That'll reopen issues and take us backwards. I think at this point we're discussing where we've said a question should be directed to one party. Well, would it be wise to send it to other parties? In the staff notes, are there other background documents or considerations we should be thinking about? But I don't think we particularly want to get into redoing the questions after all the massaging that was done in the sub-team, would be my view.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So back to Martin. And to you too, Phil, let me ask, is that do you see a problem with expanding who we ask these questions to, like the providers or the registrants or trademark owners?
No, I don't. I think, you know, this is a staff document where the staff in their best judgment has said this question is best sent to this party, but I think it's perfectly within the scope of this conversation, say, well, maybe that should be asked of those folks over there. They might have something useful to say. So I think, but in terms of actually, these questions are the consolidated questions, reducing redundancies, increasing focus, and staying within the scope of the charter. And so I think the substance of the questions is set, recognizing that when we meet with the survey preparers, they may advise us to ask the questions in somewhat different form but with the same object, and we'll bring any changes back to the working group before the survey goes out, is my understanding of the process.
That's a good point. And I think some of the rephrasing that Martin may be offering may be by way of thinking about how the questions actually might be might apply to other groups. But that's a good point. Of course, these are the questions that have been locked down by the working group. Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks. It's Greg Chatton for the record. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Good. I share the concerns that John Nevitt raised, and I think they're similar to what Phil raised as well, that reopening it's not really rephrasing the questions, frankly, but it's kind of going back down a path, and we can obviously have the whole discussion here in the plenary that we had in the subgroup, and it's unfortunate that our fearless leader, Paul McGrady, isn't on the call, since he would be able to kind of summarize how we got to where we got. But again, the intention here is not to analyze or to comment on or to evaluate the additional marketplace RPMs. The point is to understand them so that we can evaluate and the RPMs that are within our remit. So I think, you know, getting into questions that smack of looking for analysis or capacity to make past judgment on the additional marketplace RPMs takes us beyond the scope of where this group is supposed to go. And I think that, you know, as John noted, I think bullet points 2 and 3 go there. So I would be concerned about adding those questions here. As Phil noted, I think the questions are pretty much set. What we're doing here now is figuring out how to deal with the questions and kind of the next step. Thanks.
And how to evaluate the question, who to send the questions to. Thank you for your comment, Greg. Does anyone else want to comment on this? So there is a recommendation of expansion of the question that with so many subparts that some of these may go to other parties as well. There seems to be some agreement on that, but not rewriting the question or rephrasing it in such a way that would change the questions that are being asked. Okay, any additional comments on question 3? Terrific. I just want to note that the staff note points to some additional places we can find information about this material now, including the original applicant guidebook from 2012 and the TMCH operational guidelines and the TMCH functional specification and Deloitte's own guidelines. So there is material that's published that will be of use, as well as the outreach that we're talking about to various stakeholders. Okay, from question 3 then, we go to question 4. Amr, does everyone have control of the document themselves? Yes. Okay, question 4, another long question. What are each registry operator's rules for each type of additional marketplace RPM it offers? Parentheses, noting that some new GTLD registry operators offer more than one version of a protected marks list service, close parent question mark. And 3 bullet points, 3 situations where a trademark holder uses a protected marks list service, e.g. a blocking service, for one class of goods and services, are they able to block another rights holder who holds the same trademark but for a different class or classes of goods and services? 2nd bullet point, what do registry operators impose as a condition for using protected marks lists, e.g. blocking services? For example, do they all use the same valid SMD file contained in the TMCH database? And third bullet point, how much and what manner of use does each registry operator make of data from the TMCH or the trademark holder in providing its additional marketplace RPMs? And here it looks like the staff note as well is that these questions be directed to registry operators. Is there any would people agree? Is there any changes, recommendations for additional places we might find data on these important questions? Amr, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Amr from staff. I just wanted to flag one thing since the question of who these questions should be asked to. During the review of these questions by the working group, it was suggested that the first bullet under question four also be asked of trademark owners. So that thought was captured in this document. Further, later on, you will see where there are questions directed to trademark owners. So just wanted to flag that in case anyone wanted to bring it up now, since this is the first bullet under question four. Thank you.
Terrific. Amr, before you get off, that means that that whole bullet was copied farther down?
That is correct, Kathy. This is Amr again. If you move further down, you'll see under Section 3, questions directed to trademark owners. The first bullet of question 4 was also placed there, however, slightly rephrased in a question form targeting trademark owners, asking them whether they've somehow been blocked by these additional marketplace RPMs.
Great, and that's towards the top of page 3 on the document. Great, Amr, thank you. Thank you for the comment. Okay, good point that some of this has been cut, pasted, and slightly rephrased farther down. So question 4, as it exists now, is directed towards registry operators. Any proposals, any other proposals on that, or shall we move on? Martin, go ahead, please.
Hello, this is Martin for the record. Here I have some small remarks again to share. First of all, are the registry operators' rules for additional marketplace RPMs fully published and disclosed? Do we really know them? Where can we find them? If they are published, do they get updated? In general, is where we can find additional information on these additional marketplace RPMs. And would the providers be able to provide additional data and insight? Maybe providers also can give us some light on this question.
Okay. Thanks. So you're wondering if there are other places we might be able to get the data, including from the providers, and whether all the rules are published. Does anyone want to shed light in the chat room or online about whether registry operators was the question, Martin, publish all the information about additional marketplace RPMs? And also whether providers could provide some additional insight as well. Okay, seeing no one wanting to comment, Amr, if you could note that there might be other places to check this data, there might be other sources for the data as well, including the providers. Martin, does that capture what you were looking for? Your hand is still raised, so the floor is yours if you'd like it.
Again, yes, Amr is doing a great job. Thank you, Amr.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Any more comments on question 4? And staff points out that there is current publicly available information that has been published by certain registry operators. And so, and I believe that they've already worked on cataloging a lot of that information in a separate document. So we do have a good starting point for question 4. Okay, Question five, watching for hands, looking at the chat room. Question five, for registry operators that extended the trademark claim service beyond the required 90 days, what has been their experience in terms of exact matches generated beyond the mandatory period? For example, in terms of registration volume and numbers of exact matches. The staff note here is that, as with the planned survey on Sunrise and trademark claims to be sent to trademark owners, this question can be added to the version of that survey that is sent to registry operators. So recommending that this go out to registry operators as well. Any thoughts on question five? Additional data sources. And Amr has noted that he'll be getting back on the call. Martin, go ahead, please.
Very short remark. This is Martin for the record, Martin Silva. I'm only asking myself, shouldn't we be asking registrants what is their experience with extension of the trademark claim service beyond the required 90 days, you know, their experience there? I'm pretty sure we could do something meaningful.
Sorry, I was expecting you to talk for longer, Martin. So should we be asking registrants about asking registrants about this question as well and their experience with the 90 days, with trademark claims beyond the 90 days? Okay, a good one to capture and another source of data. Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks. Greg Chapman for the record. If I'm not incorrect, the trademark claims beyond the 90 days notice only goes to the trademark owner. So I'm not exactly sure what relevant data there would be in terms of registrants' experience generally, other than registrants who were say defendants or respondents in UDRP cases, by and large, the experience is there is no experience because there's no knowledge by the registrant or attempted registrant that there is a claims notice being sent to the brand owner. So this seems like we're kind of adding questions that aren't going to yield much and that are just going to start belaboring the whole process. I understand that there's some desire here to kind of permeate this with registrant-based questions. That seems to be the theme here. But while registrant views are obviously important, I'm a registrant. But at the same time, not everything is a registrant issue or one where there's meaningful data. So I think in terms of maximizing the effectiveness of this, as the council wanted us to do, we have to think about the quality of the questions we're asking. And I kind of have some concerns about that one, for instance. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Phil, do you want? Will you be responding to Greg on this, or a different type?
Both responding and adding.
Great. Go ahead, please.
Well, I think there's a couple of different things capturing this question. One, I think the main point of the question is to if I think we all recall the analysis group opined based on the data they collected in their analysis that. Going beyond 90 days in terms of a mandatory generation of claims notices for exact matches beyond 90 days would not have much additional deterrent effect. So I think the intent of this question is to the extent that any there's data available to test that theory. I'd respond to Greg, and I may be right or I may be wrong, and I'd ask staff to chime in. I think there's two different things here. The clearinghouse can and does provide to mark holders who keep their marks registered for extended periods, notice of exact match registrations, even where no claims notice has been generated to a registrant when it's past the mandatory 90-day point. Now, I believe the registry operators, were free to voluntarily have a period beyond 90 days where they'd be generating claims notices to registrants for exact matches. I don't know if any actually did, but we'd have to check on that. So, but I think the intent is to look at really the issue of would mandating a generation of claims notices beyond the 90 days, the first 3 months of a registry's operation, have any significant deterrent effect, or the folks who are going to attempt to jump in early and register a mark for cyber squatting purposes going to do it early on and not beyond that. Finally, in terms of surveying registrants, I wouldn't be against, I don't know if there's a way to post this as a notice, but on ICANN's website and see if anybody wants to volunteer an experience, but I don't even know how we'd identify and survey registrants. How would we know which registrants received a claims notice beyond 90 days and didn't go on to register the domain because of it? How many of those registrants would even know that it was the 91st day, not the 89th day? So I'm not against surveying registrants, but for this one, I'm not sure how we would find the registrants who might have any data for us. But I'm willing to consider suggestions on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Very useful comments in terms of context and background on this, as with Greg. So you've left open the possibility that they're of surveying registrants, as Martin has requested, on this question might be possible, but complicated. I'll add by way of historical background, certainly the original STI did think that there was value in limiting the trademark claim service, and that's one of the questions that I think is being tested in some ways by the question is, you know, is there value or isn't there, and what are the costs and benefits to everyone involved of going beyond taking trademark claim services beyond the required 90 days? So, you know, should we be asking trademark owners whether they find benefit in it? Should we be asking registrants whether they find benefits, costs, you know, taking the question beyond?
Kathy, this is Claudio. Can I jump in?
Claudio, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. I think those are good questions. I'm just looking at the way this question is phrased, and it seems it is tailored towards the registry operator by its terms. Because it says for registry operators, and then it refers to the there as presumably referring to the registry operator in this question. So I just think we'd be back at that issue where we would essentially be asking a different question, as you described, to if it was directed towards the trademark owner or another registrant. It could see it being useful, but I think it's just a different question, and I don't see how they could provide information about the registry operator's experience since, you know, they're not the registry operator. That's kind of my thoughts on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudio, and thanks for such active participation from audio. Martin or anyone else, did you want to respond? There is a active response on this that this question five, is directed to registry operators. And that's where it should go. The staff note, it looks like it should, they're recommending, again, that it be added to the Sunrise and Trademark Claims questions that we're planning on sending out. I'll pause for a second, see if anyone else wants to comment. Okay, closing question five, unless there is anyone who raises their hand. Okay. Moving on to what staff has labeled Section Roman numeral 3, questions directed to trademark owners. And this is exactly the question that we were just talking about, being relocated, the first bullet point of question four. A question to trademark owners. In this case, staff has rephrased it, which I think is fine, but I raise that. Have you been blocked from registering to a second-level domain name matching your registered trademark in any of the GTLDs operated by Donuts, Minds and Machines, or Rightside? That seems pretty directed to me and probably directed to the right party. Okay. Amr, did you want to add anything else? There are some fairly extensive staff notes on this. Is there anything you wanted to add as we go through this section?
Thanks, Kathy. This is Amr from staff. And yeah, the staff note beneath this question basically covers my earlier comment that this question which is the first bullet from question four, was originally targeting registry operators as respondents. However, as a result of working group feedback during the review of these questions, it was suggested that this first bullet also be rephrased and asked of trademark owners. So I think the staff note is basically attempting to capture that.
And Amr, hang on a second. Let me just double check that in the notes you're recommending that this question be added on as a rider, basically, to the Sunrise Period and Trademark Claims questions that are already going out to trademark owners as part of the current survey. Is that right?
Well, currently, Kathy, as you know, the data metrics for policymaking request form only covers questions for Sunrise registration and trademark claims that have been identified by the working group and the two sub-teams working on those topics. However, if the working group, in review of these questions for additional marketplace RPMs and the potential target respondents, if these are identified and if it would be helpful to add those to the questions going out to any of the stakeholders in surveys, then this can certainly be done as well. And it's a good thing, I guess, that the working group is going through this exercise now, so that these can be pointed out as soon as possible and then factored in when determining the budget for this data gathering project. Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you, Amr. That's why I just wanted to point out that was the staff recommendation, which makes perfect sense to me. Okay. Section 3, question 4, first bullet point. That looks like to be the total of the questions going out to trademark owners. Moving on to section 4, unless I see any hands or comments. Okay. Is that John? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry to go back, but where is this question 4 coming from? Was that in the document? It's paragraph 3, question 4. It says rephrased. What was it rephrased from?
Good question. I'll answer it only because Amr has mentioned it. If you go back to page 2, to the top, to question 4, that starts, what are each registry operator's rules for each type of additional marketplace RPM? The first bullet point there, as we were going through that, Amr noted that first bullet point, where a trademark holder uses a protected marks list service for one class of services, are they able to block another rights holder who holds the same trademark but for a different class of goods and services? Sorry, I'm summarizing a little bit there. But he noted that staff had recommended that be taken and made into a question directed to trademark owners, because we have these different categories here, basically, in this document. So they lifted that first bullet point of question 4 and made it a question directed to trademark owners.
That rephrasing, I don't think we should be pointing out specific GTLD registries when there might be others that apply. I think you should follow the same language that's in the that was in the question.
So, John, don't get it. So you would delete. So, in the rephrasing, it's have you been, again, to trademark owners, have you been blocked from registering a second-level domain name matching your registered trademark in any, in, would it make sense to say in any of the new GTLDs rather than saying in any of the new GTLDs operated by Donuts, Minds, and Machines, or Rightside?
Yes, and you could add whatever language, what do we have in question four about additional marketplace RPMs?
Okay.
I mean, it
no, makes
said
sense.
This 100 times. An additional, you know, a block is just like a registration. So it's, yes, they've been blocked, obviously, and then it would be blocked if they were registered and blocked if they have a DPML. But why limit it to three companies?
Amar, I'm trusting you've captured that. Does anybody have any comments that seems to make sense to me? It's consistent with the original phrasing. Thanks for the comment, John. So asking trademark owners about all new GTLDs. Phil, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, for the record. I'd like to respond to John and also comment on something in the chat. I think for John, I think that's a fair critique. I think staff probably presumed, and they may be correct, that those are the three portfolio operators who offer DPML-type blocking services. I think it's fine to just say in any of the new GTLDs, period, and it may turn out that that experience has only happened in registries operated by those three companies, but I don't think they we should have a narrow question restricted by companies, and also I'm not sure trademark owners would necessarily know always which registry operator was running a particular new TLD that they wish to register a domain at. In regard to the chat on the feasibility of registrant survey, let me say I'm fine with surveying registrants to the maximum extent it's feasible that we can find them and get meaningful comments. I did go to the link that George provided, and I thank George for that. I saw that was a, and let me just bring that up, that was a general survey, the global registrant survey undertaken by ICANN. The press release was in September 2016. But the types of questions they were asked were very broad questions that would, you know, you would expect some ability to answer on the part of any registrant. Are you aware of certain legacy TLDs, certain new TLDs? Do you register which is one domain or more domains? Do you trust the industry? How do you feel about it? Do you use alternatives to domain names like social media accounts, et cetera? So what I'm saying is you could put that out to a kind of a random sample of registrants and expect to get meaningful data, but you might, since it would be more like finding needles in the haystack, I think, with registrants affected by what we're talking about here. And mainly what we're talking about here for the registry operators is DPML. How would we find registrants who were blocked from getting a domain they wanted to because a trademark owner had blocked that term through the whole portfolio? I think it'd be difficult. And then for the extended notice service offered by the Trademark Clearinghouse, to answer that question of how many registrants registered a domain that was an exact match to a mark, and because of the notice provided to the trademark owner, were sent a cease and desist letter or were the subject of a UDRP or a trademark infringement suit. It'd be hard to trace the C&D letters, but you know, there's a limited number of URS cases and UDRP cases that were in new TLDs, and at least under confidentiality, someone could analyze how many of them matched, you know, names in the trademark database, clearinghouse database. So you could probably get that one and make some surmises about the interaction of the extended notice to trademark owners and acting on that information to bring follow-up enforcement actions without surveying the registrant. So those are my general comments on that. I haven't thought it about a whole lot, but I did think that might be useful for us to think about feasibility of registrant surveys. In some cases, maybe it's possible. In some cases, it may not be possible. It may be possible to get the information we might want to see through other means of analysis. Thank you.
Good points, Phil, and I think this is Kathy, of course. I think that's been part of the process of this, you know, part of the analysis of this discussion. But good points, and thank you for bringing up things going on in the chat room. I wonder whether we should be including, just as another source of data, some of what you were just talking about sounds familiar from the analysis group. I think they did some of this URS analysis of extended trademark claims, so there may be information there as well. Maxim, let me turn this over to you.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Just small clarification to question four. By definition, the additional right protection mechanisms are used only by those who use them, I mean registries. So these questions could be asked only to registries who deployed such mechanisms. And if we find any more registries other than three mentioned, then most probably we can ask them these questions, I mean question four. But all other registries, they will just respond, no, we don't use it. And it just will allow us to save time.
Thanks, Maxim. That's a good point. That's a very good point. And I'd like to ask Amar to make sure we add that to the comments. Okay, so we've gone back to question four a bit. We've gone forward to question four, first bullet point for trademark owners, and revised that a bit. Absent any other comments, let's go on to this is the middle of page three, section Roman numeral four, questions directed to registrars. This is question five. For registrars who operated an extended trademark claims service, i.e. beyond the required 90 days, what has been their experience in terms of exact matches generated beyond the mandatory period, for example, in terms of registration volume and numbers of exact matches? To paraphrase Claudio, this would seem to be a question that on its face is directed towards registrars, and staff has recommended that it be a question to registrars. Anything that we should be adding or looking at, and in fact, that seems to be the staff note, that the working group agreed that question five should appropriately also be sent to registrars. And as noted above, this question, and again, I'm still reading the staff note, this question can be added to the survey already being planned for Sunrise and trademark claims. That makes sense to me. Anything on question five? Okay, Roman numeral five, questions directed to trademark clearinghouse providers. This is the original question two of the subteam. What information on the following aspects of the operation of the TMCH is available and where can it be found? A, ancillary services offered by the TMCH, which are not mandated by the ICANN RPMs, including but not limited to the post 90 days ongoing notification service and other services in support of registry-specific offerings. B, with whom and under what arrangements does the TMCH share data and for what non-mandated RPM purposes? We don't have a staff note on this question, but again, this is under questions directed to TMCH providers. Does anyone have any comments? Martin, go ahead, please.
This is Martin Silva for the record. Basically, I don't see why this is a question that is only targeted to the trademark clearinghouse providers. I think this is also a very relevant question, where they are individuals, non-commercials, small businesses, entrepreneurs, even to try to understand the geographic diversity of the registrants' perspective, not only if the registrants come from one stakeholder group or the other. Just to see is this hurting registrants in their various views or backgrounds.
Thanks, Martin. Hold on a second. So you're recommending that this be directed to parties beyond the TMCH provider. Who might that include? And is there any particular part of the question you want to you'd recommend sending in that direction, or all of it?
Well, first of all, I think registrants specifically as a category, but I think that category can be broken down, and we can understand that it is both relevant to have non-commercial individuals, small businesses, and even try to the geographical location of them. Like, what is the challenge that the Global South has specifically towards ancillary services, for instance? Because I'm pretty sure it's not the same reality for them than for people from Europe or the U.S. At least I see that more often being from the Global South.
Okay, so since this question is not on its face directed towards a particular group, expanding it, but you're recommending expanding it beyond trademark clearinghouse providers to geographic groups,
yes,
non-commercial groups, commercial, including small business.
Registrants, yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I know it's getting very late for some people. Any additional thoughts on this? George writes, given so many registrants of new GTLDs were from China, attention should be paid to ensure any survey of registrants cover China in particular. And well, Martin says, I promise not to make any more remarks. Martin, thank you for your remarks. And thank everyone for their remarks. Okay, so question two, expanded.
Kathy,
Claudio, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think I'm not 100% clear on what Martin is asking, just because maybe I'm misunderstanding his question, but I just thought this was sort of an objective question about what the provider makes available, where is it found, and B, with whom does it share data and for what purpose. And so I just looked at that as something objective that the provider was going to provide. And I'm just not really clear how the survey of users kind of fits into that. It just seems like it's kind of going in a different direction. That's asked to a broader group, but it was just a thought. Thanks.
Cool. Claudia, thank you. Sorry, I'm losing my words now. Claudia, thank you for your remarks. Maxim, do you want to respond or raise another issue? Go ahead, please.
Maxim Ozobo, for the record. As I understand, Claudio suggested that we ask questions relevant only to TMCH provider to other parties. I'm not sure how it helps us. It'd be great to have clarification on that. Thank you.
Yeah, so I was just looking at this question as something that staff would be able to collect by interfacing with the TMCH provider. And I thought that would be able to answer these questions, but it seems like you thought asking a broader group would provide, I guess, more context or more information. It just wasn't clear to me what else you were seeking to obtain beyond kind of what's the objective question being asked here in question two. Is there something broader that you're looking to collect?
Greg, would it be okay if Martin responds and then we call on you?
Sure.
Great, thank you. Martin, go ahead, please.
It might be considered more broad because it definitely takes in more data, basically, I want to see from the registrant's perspective what are the experience, the costs, whatever you want to call it, of having these ancillary services in the terminal clearing house. And I just have the intuition. Maybe everything that I'm saying is not necessarily relevant, pragmatic. So I'm not taking a strong stand on these things. These are just intuitions that I think have enough background to be, you know, talked. And yes, I mean, I think it's a little more broad, but not necessarily taken out of proportion. Just the other side of the same issue.
So, Martin, let me ask, are you saying that there might be information on the operation of ancillary services of that might be relevant, that registrants might be able to cast some light on from various places? So that information seems to be broader to you. Is that kind of where you're coming from?
Okay. Yes, but it's just an intuition. It maybe needs some sort of grounding at the end.
Okay. Greg, go ahead, please. Thank you, Martin, and thank you, Claudio. Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. This seems to be completely changing the question. As Claudio indicated, the question is looking for basically, you know, objective factual information about the ancillary services being offered. Now this is being turned into some sort of anecdotal harm question. It's not clear at all where, you know, these harms would be found and where these registrants would be found. And I think it's all well and good to try to shove everything through a registrant lens, but I think this one's really tortured in trying to do that. Secondly and separately, not to add yet another seat at the table here, but I'm concerned that in all of this, and remembering that we're dealing with RPMs, I don't know that we've done anything to survey consumer or end-user experiences with any of this. And since trademark rights protection mechanisms are ultimately intended to benefit consumers by reducing confusion and getting ripped off in various different ways, I'm not sure what we can do about it at this point, but it just occurs to me that I think we've, especially as we keep hearing about how registrants need to be asked every question under the sun turned, you know, inside out and backwards, and we're not asking really the beneficiary or one of the beneficiaries of all of this, of the RPMs. In general, we're not asking a lot of questions about benefits. It seems like every question is being phrased that's being offered up here is a harm question, too. So I think that's rather one-sided. But I wonder how we're going to know whether there are consumer benefits to any of this from any of the questions or that we're asking. Just a thought.
Great. Greg, thanks for your comments. Phil, you're next in the queue. Everybody, we've got 3 minutes to go and one more question. Phil, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Kathy, Phil, I'll be brief in view of the time. Just circling back to the topic we started with 90 minutes ago, which was the approval of the motion. In reviewing these questions, I'm happy to note that I don't think they're mostly factual questions to bring information back to the working group so we can make a few informed judgments on the role of the marketplace RPMs. And I don't really see them expanding our need for professional survey assistance. Even the one the trademark owners is quite simple. Did you try to register a domain and were told it was blocked through a blocking service? So it's a very targeted question without a lot of room for interpretation and how to put it. So I'm happy to see that this shouldn't add much, if anything, to our overall data request under the motion that was just approved by council. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Phil, because Mary noted, I guess that was a response to Mary noting that, that we do have a limited budget for the data gathering as just approved by council. Maxim, go ahead, please. 1 minute till the end of the call.
Maxim Alzoba, small note. I think we cannot decide for the whole grouping during this meeting. So if our clarifications to questions lead to extension of budget, which might result in denial of GNSO Council to support it because the list of questions they supported was shorter. I think we need to conduct a poll within this group to understand how many TDP members support each of additional questions. Thanks, because if we, for example, extend the current list of questions this way that it demands us to reach end users, I'm not sure we will be, we will have the budget for that. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Maxim. A lot of good discussion, very late at night for a lot of people. We've gone our full 90 minutes, and so I am going to close the session subject to staff letting us know when the next meeting is, and thank everyone for such active discussion and participation. I would say we're still on question two. I don't think we finished it. All sorts of interesting questions on whether we can and should ask about ancillary services, where we get that information, what information. That's the start of question two, and whether the TMCH providers are the sole source of that information or whether, as Martin has suggested, there are some other appropriate forms without adding too much to our budget. So I think that's open for the list discussion. Mary or Amar, could you let us know when our next meeting is? And again, thanks to everyone for being on the call tonight and this morning, Asia time. Mary or Amar? Hearing no one, I think we return to our original slot next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. For 90 minutes, hopefully to wrap up this document quickly and move on to other parts of our agenda. Any last comments? Thanks to everyone.
Hi, Kathy. This is Amar from staff. Apologies, it took me a minute to get off mute, but yes, just confirming that we are next week, we are getting back to the original call times, which is 1500 UTC on Wednesday, October 4th. Thanks.
Perfect. So we have almost wrapped up with this data gathering exercise, and of course, as Maxim has suggested, we will put out the edits. Staff has been taking notes, and we'll put out the edits for review by the working group. Again, thanks to everyone. Good night, good morning, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording source and disconnect all remaining lines. Thank you.